here's our theme for our economic outlook. Here we are still again. I was thinking of just running the same presentation I had last year. So we got some different stuff here. Here's our agenda. We'll talk about the economic situation, the printing business, then the doomish stuff you all like to hear, then hearty thanks for your attention, then we'll break at about 9:40 and 9:45 so some of you can run up to your booths if you have booth duty, and we'll stay here for Q&A until 10 o'clock, okay? Just like we usually do. And then I'll thank you again for coming, and then you'll mutter on your way out, why did I stay here again? It's the same thing as last year. For the balance of 2013, there's not much left. Continued sluggishness. We had this interest rise in the bond markets that scared the heck out of people. It's about done for now. If you've noticed, unemployment's been improving, and now everybody's back to work. It is hollow. Incomes are not rising. We're going to talk about that in inflation shortly. Inflation looks tame if you're a Federal Reserve chairman. And commercial print demand is still contracting. There is a shift in terms of the shares. We'll talk about that. Looks like it's going to be about down 2.5% for the year in terms of current dollars, closer to about 4% for the year in terms of volume. And with that financial situation, I do have some concern about our industry suppliers. If you are a printer here and contemplating capital investment, I'm not saying this to be nasty to industry suppliers and all that. Make a good decision, because the financial stability of your supplier is going to be very important to you in terms of service and training and all those kinds of things. Over the next year or so, I think we may see some mergers coming across in the marketplace, especially in the capital equipment area. 2014 should be a very exciting year. It'll be midterm elections. And my usual comment about the politics is that when all is said and done, more will be said than done. And I think that we're finding that to be true, especially over these last few weeks. Corporate spending is going to be still slow, which means that people are going to be trying to get more and more out of their budgets. And any effort that they have to expand digital media use will be sold to them as a means of not eliminating paper, but as controlling their costs and being more effective. We as an industry need a much better understanding of those kinds of things. GDP is going to stay in the 2% range. I don't see anything. Maybe a quarter will be getting a little better, others will be worse. Interest rates are going to be rising slightly. I think the Federal Reserve is going to be very concerned about acting in any kind of a rash way. In fact, what they may do is say that they're acting in a rash way, but when you actually look at the numbers, they won't. Employment will get below 7%. The weight of the Affordable Care Act in terms of part-time workers and those kinds of things will be more obvious. Right now, all the reports that you hear about part-time workers are kind of anecdotal, because the level of part-time employment in the economy is nowhere out of the ordinary compared to historical standards at this time. But I think it may change. I think there's a lot of pressure to change that, because they're really afraid that that might happen. And as far as if the election were held today, I think we'd be looking at the same situation in Washington that we had before. And when all is said and done, more will be said than done. We're going to be talking about obstructionists and the pain of austerity, and we can't do that. And it's the usual stuff. You'll get used to it. Don't worry. Overall, the economy recovery, this bothers me, because here it is, 5 years after the recession was declared, and 6 years after the recession was started, we're still talking about the recovery. And that tells you how slow it is. So when I created the recovery indicators back 4 years ago, I thought for sure I'd be stopping them by now. But they keep going back and forth and not really being full and offering the level of confidence that we should have. But nonetheless, the economy is slightly better than on a statistical basis than it was before. One of the problems, though, when you look at gross domestic product, it tells you that the economy has recovered. But when you look at the actual employment data, it has not. When you look at other data series, it has not reached the full recovery stage. And when you adjust employment for population growth, it looks even worse than it may have been at the beginning of the recession. An important concept in economics is productivity. That means that you're increasing the value of goods produced or services produced with the similar kinds of inputs. We have been getting productivity. I've got a slide coming up telling you why I think it's the wrong kind of productivity. But when productivity is growing faster than GDP, it means that there is really no need to be hiring more and more people. Now, this is not saying that productivity is bad. I'm just describing something about the nature of its relationship with the gross domestic product. When you see GDP grow faster than productivity, that's when businesses and others start to hire. That has been the sign of every single kind of recovery, where GDP just can't be constrained, and they just have to go looking for people to be working in plants and the like. That's not our situation. This chart is going to be a little small, but I'll guide you through the general tenor of it, is that we're still missing about 8.9 million jobs. The employment level in January 2008, which is the month after the recession started, was 146 million. In August of this year, it was 144 million. And in January 2008 grew to where it should be. It should have been 153 million. So we're short about 9 million jobs. The labor force should be up at a level of about 161 million people. It's actually down to 155 million. Many people have been dropping out of the labor force because they're either closer to retirement or they feel they can't get jobs in relation to the transfer payments they may be receiving from the government. Now, having said that, the fastest growing, in fact, the only growing segment of employment in the U.S. are workers 65 and older. It's a very small part of it, but that is the only category of worker that has been growing for the last 5 years. So there may be many workers who said, gosh, you know, my IRA got a little trashed back in 2008. Some of you remember that? Right, when you realize you had a 201K, right? So they're going back to work so as not to dip in. Here's another thing that says that the economy has not recovered. This is the National Federation of Independent Business and their Small Business Index. The two red lines are things that I add to it. Those are the bottoms of the 2003 and the bottoms of the 1992-ish recessions. And you see that the latest data is just bouncing around between those two recessionary levels. Small business is not the creator of jobs that it's generally associated with being. The whole economy creates jobs because most small businesses sell to larger businesses and to consumers. The only reason small business creates more jobs is that there's like 10 million of them. Small businesses also cut more jobs just by nature of how many small businesses there are. So just keep that in mind. In terms of stimulating small business, there's some things that governments can do and the like, but the best thing to do would be to stimulate the entire economy with something that would make the economy start to grow again. So instead, we're in a situation where incomes are remaining somewhat stagnant. That's the red line here. And the top line is the unemployment number, but it's not necessarily the total number of employees. And for those who think that the stock market did really, really good yesterday, and is at all-time highs again, the stock market did do good yesterday. We're not. Only the Russell 2000, which is small stocks, has gone above its all-time consumer price index adjusted high. The NASDAQ is still 44% below its high. The S&P is about 20%, and the Dow Jones is about 7%. If you were dollar-cost averaging through this entire thing, you know, putting some money in every single month, you did extremely well during this period, especially after 2009. But if you just had a fixed amount of money and you did not reinvest your dividends, I don't know why you wouldn't do that. Well, maybe you needed it to buy some of the goods that aren't going up in price. That was a joke. You didn't catch that one? Then you'd be still in this kind of situation. Of great concern in the rise of the stock market from its lows in 2009 is that J.P. Morgan has estimated that 60% of the rise is from stock buybacks, one of the most cowardly things that you can do with money. It's easy to do. You just tell the investment bankers to go do it for you. They're happy. They get a little fee from that. That's usually the way some of those big investment bankers like to do things. And then your stock price goes up. And if you have a bonus on earnings per share, then, of course, you start thinking things are really good. But really, nothing has happened, except that you give the illusion of the stock market rising. So many of these companies have been taking the very cheap money that has been coming out of the Fed and the banking system and reinvesting in their own stock, which has a very, very bad track record. Kodak is now out of bankruptcy. At one time, they did a stock buyback for $52 a share. Heidelberg did a stock buyback. I think it was, I don't remember if it was 35 euros or 25 euros or something. Anyway, their stock is now 2 euros per share. And I would always rather see the dividend go back to the stockholders as some kind of special dividend, because if you don't know what to do with the money, I'll tell you, I'll figure out something I can do for myself with the money. But instead, it just gets mixed in here, and you really can't tell if it's effective or not. But J.P. Morgan says that that's the main reason for the rise. It's not anything having to do with the actual performance of the companies. Now, inflation is extremely important, and some of you love writing this stuff down. These are the multipliers that you have for determining how your business is actually doing after you adjust for inflation. So if you take your financial statements from 2010, multiply it by 1.066, that will put it in today's dollars. And then same thing for 2011 and the like. My advice on doing this still stands. Make sure the plant is empty. You're the last one in the office. You have a fresh bottle where you break the seal. Some fresh ice. But do that before you start punching things in Excel, okay? Save it for the results. Generally, the economic environment is counterproductive. This is a very intense slide, but it's good to have it all in one place. Because it's hard to estimate the net present value of projects that are started and what they're going to be in the future because of a lot of various things that are going on. I'm not talking about uncertainty. I'm talking about certainty. When you do that calculation, a lot of things that look out in the future do not look good for investment. But what does look good is more efficiency. And why is that? Because you know the general time you're going to get your payback. You know what it's going to be. And it helps you reorganize your company in some other kind of way. And you can generally see, at least in the short term, some change in the value added that you have. So you're changing the nature of your company to cope with economic realities of outside the business. Now, expansion requires some sense that putting money in a situation where you're going to have a negative cash flow for 3, 5, or 6 years before you start seeing a return is still positive in the long run for you. And that's really what's missing from the economy. A lot of those kinds of investments are not being made. They may be being made overseas, but not in this particular economy right now. So anything that gets through that process, the future returns have to be really, really big, because if you're not using 3 or 4 or 5% in your net present value calculation for inflation, you might get really hurt 7, 8 years from now if you're not doing that. And taking that right off the top means that first of all, that any investment you make has to be really, really good. So this raises the bar for everything. And when you're in a sluggish economy, anything that has a negative cash flow doesn't look too good to you. So that's why keep investing in efficiency. That efficiency increases the productivity. And because the economy is not growing, this becomes a kind of a vicious cycle where only certain companies or limited parts of industries are actually making their investment. Now, one of the areas where the investment seems to have been paying off is in digital printing. So even though it had a little problem in 2009, it now represents, at least according to the Commerce Department, 9% of industry shipments. I would suggest it's probably closer to about 15%, because not all of it would be reported in the category necessary for the Commerce Department to detect it. You see all the other processes just kind of stuck down at the bottom. I've written some columns about this recently in much greater detail if you want to take a look at that. But basically, the pie is shrinking, But digital printing's share of that keeps getting bigger and bigger. And a lot of it has to do with the kind of work that clients are looking for in the way they're going to use print for cross-media and some very sophisticated integrated marketing programs. A issue that we have is especially with the distribution of hard copy materials. And the primary distributor of our hard copy materials is the U.S. Postal Service. How many of you have heard of them? Do you like them? They're nice people. Right? But what are they looking at when they're deciding what their prices should be? Well, they're generally looking at, for first class mail, the consumer price index. And they'll set that as their first goal. We will not raise first class postage more than the consumer price index. All right, this line here at the top is the producer price index, which merges first class and all of the standard mail and all of the bulk mail prices together to come up with an overall price. Those prices have risen generally faster than the consumer price index and faster than first class. So the PPI is actually pretty high. All right, so that's inflation for the Postal Service. The next line underneath that is printing prices. So if somebody has a budget, let's say budget is $10,000, and let's say postage is $1,000, just to use round numbers, and then the Postal Service comes out with an increase, the Postal Service grabs that increase. So let's say that becomes $200, but their budget is still $500. So the printer and anybody else part of the project has to pay, basically is paying the Postal Service on behalf of the customer. And that's one reason why printing prices have not risen. But there's another reason, and that's the declining cost of technology. So the two bottom lines are the producer price index for wireless communications and computer equipment. And this gap is widening every year, and it never really gets any attention in terms of the distribution cost of print. This is one of the things that we're fighting against. In terms of getting more and more people to use print. So we have to be more creative and look for non-postal ways for this to happen or find high value added ways where the postal cost is far less of an issue. That can be hard, right? For a while we saw businesses using postcards instead of brochures. For a postcard, the postage is a huge part of that total job. And the printing is very, very small, but it wasn't very effective for them. Every door direct mail is another approach to that where you get some kind of a combination in price, but you're able to target, so at least you save money on the targeting of your overall cost for that. But there are other things that we need to be looking at, especially in terms of the way we finish our goods, changing the nature of the way people use print and envision the use of print in order to keep the business vibrant in that way. And we're starting to see some of those special applications for that. That middle blue line is printing shipments over time adjusted for inflation. No matter what you hear about the economy being the primary driver of print shipments, I hate to tell whoever says that they're wrong. It is the other kinds of media that are now in the marketplace. That blue line at the top is the total broadband hours spent in the U.S. over time on an index. It is 25 times more than it was in the year 2000. The line underneath that are the numbers of households with broadband. That has obviously grown quite considerably. It is now about 84% of households. It's generally leveling out at that area. So what's going up now is population and the number of hours online. The statistical relationship between the broadband number and print is far more statistically strong than anything having to do with economics. Although somebody who studies economics would tell you that demographics is part of economics, but you know what I'm talking about, comparing it to GDP and all those kinds of things. This is really critical because it's not just that the population is growing, they're using more hours of broadband, it's the amount of information and the way that information is delivered over that. So here's our challenge as an industry. If we believe in cross-media and multi-channel marketing and all that, Broadband is really important to us because we get involved in those programs and create a lot of that media so that we're not looking at every five-hour increase in U.S. broadband is a $1 decrease in print, but we should be capturing some of the content creation for that particular application, for that customer's job. And as far as a lot of the studies that you see about the people preferring print over other kinds of media, they never ask, well, how much print do you use? Well, I use less, but I prefer it. Well, why do you prefer it? Well, because I like the touch and getting information on that. Well, then why are you spending so much time on email? Because it's convenient, it's fast, I don't have to wait for it, and all those kinds of things. But they have a preference, they have a liking, they have a love for print. So we want to remind ourselves that print revenues are a function of a variety of things: the size, the page count, the size printers, the colors and the effects, and the frequency. There is very, and run length, of course. Gosh, how could I forget run length? All of those things have changed dramatically over the past 15 years. And it's not that people are not familiar with print, not that they don't like print, they're just not using it enough, but it's getting hit from all of those dimensions. So when you see a survey that says, you know, 70% of people say they prefer print, well, remember that used to be 100% because they had no choice. Now they have a choice. And you see some of that choice being exercised by mailers. That black line at the top is population growth, and the greenish line are the number of pieces sent through some kind of reduced rate for direct mail. We see that it's still 10% down from what it was in the year 2000, which, considering things, isn't all that bad. But then you see a steep decline in the number of first-class pieces, and the red line is the number of periodical pieces. So that would be magazines. Magazines have suffered from a decrease in circulation, also a decrease in page counts. Here's the statistical relationship for those of you who wanted to keep score. And if you don't have anything to do one day, like kind of like me, you can just run regression analyses all day comparing these. Some of you think regression analysis is where you kind of lay it down on the floor and kind of cry a lot. I'm expecting some of that later when I'm finished. But if you look at a one-point decrease in the producer price index in computer equipment, according to the regression equation for that, that comes out to about $350 million loss in terms of commercial printing. Wireless communications is a little stronger, about $1.1 billion. And a one-point increase, this is not a percentage point, a one-point increase in the index of postal service fees is equivalent to the loss of almost $1 billion in commercial printing shipments. And that had the strongest relationship on a statistical basis. This is where we are for the first 7 months of the year. We're down about $2 billion from last year, but you can see where we were in 2007. And I was kind of forecasting this stuff. Some of you knew that. Because you keep coming back for more, I can't figure out why either. Here's another game you can play with inflation. Are you really productive? The blue line is the shipments per employee in our industry. Gosh, we're doing a great job. Then when you take out inflation, you realize that our industry is only increasing its output in sales per employee by $500 a year. So despite all of our capital investment, all of our supposed knowledge about workflow and all those kinds of things, we're kind of stuck in this particular area. This should be of great concern. Of course, this has bad companies in it too. I mean, so that is a problem. I thought it was interesting, it's a little hard to see up there, but the digital printing's average per employee is $210,000 per employee, whereas the overall industry is about $175,000. Capital expenditures as a percentage of sales is working its way down to 3% of sales. It was closer to 5% of sales not too long ago. Now, there's a couple of issues with this reinvestment. We do need massive capital infusion in our industry, not just for the productivity, but also to give us the ability to create more and more new products and new formats of products. Back in 1998, we were still investing in prepress equipment, and prepress equipment was part of this. So that's part of the nature of this. Also, there's a really significant change in the nature of capital equipment investment that our industry is making. And I would tell you that as we work with printers and talk to people who design media, I would tell you everything you learned about capital investment is wrong. Okay? So what was our capital investment? It was a long-term asset that we have in our shop to produce output for a considerable period of time, in some cases decades, a little less than that. Somewhere in the early 2000s, the marketing life of the output, or the marketing value of the output, became shorter-lived than the physical output, meaning that the equipment that was supposed to last long-term was becoming more and more irrelevant to the marketplace. So how does the industry account for that kind of situation? When your market's no longer, when your product's no longer relevant as it was in the marketplace, but you still have the equipment, what's your first inclination to do? How many of you are printers? Right? You're supposed to say, lower prices. Right? And that's basically why profitability in the industry suffered so much, because we had a mismatch of our capital equipment base with what the market was actually demanding. Digital printing has helped solve some of that in the business, because it's newer equipment designed for particular applications. But when you have that mismatch, you're going to have some serious problems in terms of managing your fixed costs, and that's one of the reasons why we have all the emphasis on consolidation and things like that. And that's why printing industry profits have gone down, and we're still at a stage where we can't get above, as an industry, above the $3.9 billion that we had in 2005. I mean, look how good we were back in the late 1990s when everyone was complaining about overcapacity. I decided, since the industry has shrunk so much, to look at the number of the profits based on the number of employees. And we're basically in the same range that we've been for quite a long time. We're about $6,800 profit per employee. So we've got $175,000 in revenue per employee and $6,800 in profit. And that's stayed about the same. So it's not just the $175,000 that's lasted for 20-something years. It's this. So our forecast for commercial printing, only pay attention to the right-hand column, that's my forecast, is that we're looking at this year finishing around $78.5 billion, and then next year decreasing a little bit. Some of our models are more pessimistic than I am. I like when models are more pessimistic than I am, because it makes me look like an optimist, right? One of our models is forecasting a market of about $18 billion by 2019. I hope that doesn't happen. We see the shift in media in terms of the employment that we have. Printing employment is down. It generally moves in lockstep with the amount of shipments that we have. But look at the other line that I've got there called public relations. It's not a very big number. It's only about 56,000 people. But it's up close to 7% since last year. That's the shift from advertising to social media, to search engine optimization, things like Twitter, to Facebook, to general public relations, to events, to sponsorships, to branding. Those are the real main areas for growth in promotion. Everything else is a little bit stagnant. Now, I mention those because very often those kinds of public relations tasks require some kind of printed output. That's one reason why retail signage, wide format applications are doing so well, is because of the shift in media that you're seeing away from advertising into public relations. And you can see the change in overall advertising dollars. This includes public relations, is growing where things like publishing are going down. And so any market that depended on advertising revenues like newspapers and periodical publishers, they're having problems, but advertising is actually going up. And that's the case. So they're doing more and more production of things that would be considered in the overall category of public relations, and that's where they're busy. And that's one of the areas of non-distributed hard copy that you should be looking at if you are in the print business. Look toward events. Look toward branding possibilities and branding situations where you can pull in technologies like wide format, like digital printing, and not be subject to a lot of the problems of dealing with the post office and other kinds of distribution. More than 2 years ago, we had the switch of the number of employees in printing and the combination of advertising agency and graphic design businesses. So we knew that content was still being created, but you see that shift there in that circle when that occurred. And here, again, is another chart showing that public relations is the only area of content creation that has been growing. In fact, since the beginning of the recession, which was December 2007, it is up about 12% since that time, and it only had a minor pullback. So that's where a lot of those budgets have been reallocated. If a small shop owner spent, $5,000 in advertising on the Yellow Pages or something like that, that would have counted as print dollars for someone. They are instead spending $2,000 to get their truck wrapped, $1,000 or so to do social media, and then get some brochures printed to have in the shop, to get some business cards done. So even they have a media mix, they just don't know it. And the number of freelance workers are growing. Let me just go through a couple of these because this is really important because I think some aspects of the Affordable Care Act are going to make freelancers a critical part of many media creation businesses and many media logistics businesses. In terms of advertising, excluding public relations, you now have 120,000 practitioners claiming to be advertising agencies even though they are sole practitioners. And they can be. They could be representing media space, for example. Public relations adds another 16,000 people. It's about 24% of their total workers are freelance. Now, if you're a printer and you are not active in your local Public Relations Society of America chapter to get to know many of these people, you're doing yourself a very, very big disservice because this is where they are. And this is how you get plugged into a lot of the applications that don't involve use of distribution by mail. Also, the American Marketing Association, I keep talking about the chapter I'm in Raleigh, which is one of the top chapters in the country. And I tweet every day or so before I go to a meeting. I say, will I see a printer at Thursday's AMA chapter meeting? I have yet to see one. One time, they had three major Raleigh, North Carolina. They had three major companies there, Blue Cross of Blue Shield of North Carolina, Bronto Software, which is a very good-sized software company in the Durham area, about 150 employees, which is big for a software company. They had a nonprofit organization, and they had a startup company there. And they laid out their media plans for the next years, and how they were using print, and how they were using social media, and how they were using advertising and TV, and how they were using online video, and not a single printer was there to hear it. So that this is the kind of thing that we've got to change for us to get involved. Do we believe in cross media? And we go to things that say cross media in it, and we go to a class and say, oh, gee, that's nice, but then we don't do it once we get out into the field. So I'm waiting for that day. The next AMA meeting in Raleigh is a week from Thursday. Okay? So watch for my Twitter feed. It also goes out into LinkedIn. And this is not a small chapter. Even when they have a bad speaker, and they haven't invited me yet, so I don't know but even when they have a bad speaker, they get 150 people. They had the CMO of Target come to lay out all of their plans, and they had close to 400 people at this luncheon, not a single printer. How does that happen? And it's all young people. I just say, being in my late 50s, I guess everybody's young now. But in good positions, making media decisions. I mean, these are people in their early 30s who are saying, we're doing this online, we're doing this in content publishing, content marketing. Does anybody here know what content marketing is? One, two. We all have to know what content marketing. When you read about content marketing, you say, oh, is that what it is? We've been doing that forever. Yeah, that's right. But you got to know what it is. And unless you go to some of these meetings, you're not going to hear some of these things. We now have more graphic designers who are freelance than actually working in graphic design studios. Commercial photography has for a long time been a very big sole practitioner business. Even they are changing their businesses to include a lot more digital media. And then publishing, I think that's going to be the next area where we get a lot more sole practitioners involved in the publishing market, especially with a lot of the services that many book printing companies have established. Some really interesting things going on that way. As far as industry consolidation is going, this may be one of the stranger things that you may hear at the entire show. I think the time for consolidation of our industry is done. There's no gasp. I'm not saying that people don't need to do it, but I mean it's the kind of consolidation that we really should be looking at, because there's so much backward-looking consolidation that goes. Gee, my business is in trouble. I can't make the kind of money I used to. Somebody please buy me, put me out of my misery, take my business. I'll tell you it's really good. Give me a good, I'll take that, and then the deal is done. But we've got to be more forward-looking about it. So I have three types of consolidation. Defensive consolidation, which is basically trying to find someone who's got the same problems you do so you can face them together, right? Offensive consolidation is something really quite, quite different. You realize that there's a gap in the kind of business that you have, and you want to reach a certain place in terms of the communications business or the media business, and you need a partner to do that. So you either find a partner to co-invest in a new business with, or you create a new business with that with some other partners, but you do something that has some kind of forward aspect to it, not based on where you are in 2013, but based on where you want to be in 2016, 2017, 2018. And then, of course, there's the I give up consolidation, which is known as a tuck-in. Maybe you know what a tuck-in is? Basically where you sell your book of business and hope that somebody else buys your equipment one day. But the sense is that what you thought was a valuable business is only valuable in terms of the volume that can go through another plant that has some open time to it. It is not a long-term solution unless you have customers who can get moved into some kind of sales process to be moved over to other kinds of media in that. So these are very general, but I think you get my point. Some really important ideas about this is that, except for the sellers, consolidations don't have a really good track record. It's really good to sell your business, usually. One of the biggest complaints that I hear from people who've joined businesses is that they didn't understand how long it would take to get the businesses to work together and a lot of the hidden costs involved in it. The rule of thumb, this is my rule of thumb, things take twice as long and cost twice as much as they should. And it's generally what I've heard from many of the printers who've done this, that a lot of the cultural issues, different sales forces, different accounting systems, I mean, they could be using the same kind of accounting software, but there's a whole philosophy of the department, the nature of the way the departments are run, that takes a lot of time to get together. And then, while you're tied up doing that, what happens in your marketplace with your competitors who haven't consolidated, who haven't decided to waste their time trying to transition? And that's usually a shift in market share that occurs at that time. So here are some of our essential points. There are some really, really good companies doing extremely well in our business who have gotten out ahead of the curve. If they've made acquisitions, they've made the right acquisitions. They've made wise capital investment choices. They're concerned about the use of that capital equipment. They make sure that it wears out. They don't have a lot of stuff that they're not using laying around. They don't fall in love with their old equipment. Oh, that's my first press. That's why it's here. They don't fall in love with that kind of stuff. They're also tied into the plans of their customers. They understand them. They have a relationship with them where they can discuss different kinds of media with them, and they can plan around that and make those other media more effective. Those are usually the companies that also have some investments in digital printing, in wide format, but also have been creating websites, e-marketing campaigns, and many other things on behalf of their customers. So they're looking at the whole picture. They have a real grasp on why people print, not just how people print or what people print. One of the stages that we're looking to help bring this, these ideas to the marketplace is something that I've been working on with Wayne Peterson, who's sitting in the back there, kind of mocking me with his, who's an expert in marketing, but has also been a CEO of printing organizations and trade service organizations, and Professor Chris Bondi at RIT, and I got together starting last year to work on a management program for printing companies that included a really interesting piece, which was an assessment tool so that businesses could understand where they are in three major aspects of their business and in nine what we call vectors. And those are the three aspects: where they are with their customers, which relates to marketing, the sales process, the acquisition of business, the output of business, the experience that customers have, the platform side, which is Chris Bondi's side, which deals with technology, but more importantly, the integration of that technology and what it means as it flows through the entire organization. And I get to do the resources side, which is where I talk about finance. And, you know, I got to drive controllers and CFOs crazy, of course, right? And people. But an interesting aspect, alliances. And we believe there's a long-term transition aspect of working with media that especially printing companies, but other graphic communications companies need, is that they need strong alliances with people who have skills, talents, and technologies that they would never invest in on their own. And that becomes a strategy to reach out to a client and delivering them the full services that they need. The other goal that we had in creating this particular training is that it had to be scalable so that a small printing company could benefit from it just as much as a large printing company could have. So over this next year, we're going to be working on a textbook, which we're working with the RIT Press on, and also some executive workshops and online delivery tools for this, so that businesses will be able to go through that assessment process, which defines where they are on each of these areas. But also, when it does that, it tells them where to work first. And that's one of our biggest problems, is that whenever you have businesses that are in either a tough marketplace or going through some kind of technological transition or just a marketplace transition in the way people choose or use your product, sometimes you will attribute your problems to one particular area, but it's actually something else that's wrong. How do you detect that? Well, if you hire a sales consultant, all your problems are going to be fixing the sales. If you hire a technology consultant, they're going to see all your technology problems. But we wanted to have an integrated look. Let's look at the whole company together, because if it doesn't work all together, then it's really not good for anyone. So keep an eye out for that. And if you want more information on that, Wayne is here. Raise your hand, Wayne. Yeah. And I'm here, in case you were wondering where I went. What's playing out? Diverse product mixes aided by alliances. That's why I wanted to put that slide first. You can't offer everything to everybody. But if you have good relationships with a graphic designer, web developers, social media experts as part of your business, and you can go to customers with them as your team, this requires you to develop a very high level of trust with them, you will be able to develop a quite different business than you likely have now. Anybody who's got a communications budget is looking to move those dollars around very quickly in response to things. That's one thing that I found really interesting as I've been going to these AMA meetings in Raleigh. How focused they are on analytics. And it's not they're focused on analytics so they can cut off one program and then start another one. They're interested in fine-tuning. They're interested in experimenting with media and seeing how it works for groups of customers and then applying it to someone else. And they're not afraid to change. They're not afraid to try something else or to mix different kinds of media together. So that experimentation process is an opening for us in getting them to use print in conjunction with the other things that they're doing. There is also a shift from traditional sales to business development. This is part of the interest in cross-media and program development for customers. And I'm starting to detect where some printers used to focus on, say, I just do insurance companies or I work on nonprofit. We're starting to focus more on finding customers who have similar problems and then trying to use those solutions that they come up with those groups of customers. And that's really quite different from us. And that comes out of the business development process. Because the more experience you have going to clients and understanding their problems and crafting new approaches to them, the more likely it is you're going to see similarities and dissimilarities with other customers, and then you can design programs there. So those are the kinds of things you're looking for, because most of these media are new. That's why they were called for usually new media, right? So there's no track record. I mean, we tend to want to look for what's trade practice, what's a financial ratio, how is this done, and we're not used to saying, oh, this is new. New is not always bad. New always means new. It's time to experiment. And that's what many of these marketing executives are looking for. They're looking for someone to give them something different, some kind of a new approach. Over these times when things are going to be a little tough with industry volume, I'm seeing, and I see it in lots of data that we get, the profit gap widens. The well-run companies, the distance between them and the companies who aren't following along with what's happening in the marketplace, their profits start to go down. And they're supposed to, because if you're not relevant to the marketplace anymore, why should you make money? That's how the marketplace tells you it's time to get out. But you really do see this in the recession data, how the profit leaders may have dropped from 10 to 7%, but the other companies fell even further. They fell well into the negative area. So the profit leaders still made money and were above industry averages even during those times. And that leads to another aspect, which is that it really is becoming very, very clear. It's not always some skill in technology or some skill in marketing that's becoming important in this business. It's financial strength that is becoming more and more important. The more over-leveraged you are, can you actually be more over-leveraged? it really affects your freedom of action in delivering services to clients and proposing good programs for them, because you get to a situation where you start proposing things because you can produce them, not because it's the kind of thing they need. And that's not good for long-term relationships with clients. It also means that you're able to respond competitively better than if you are under some kind of financial stress. So one of the recommendations that I would make virtually to anyone here who's running a printing company is to get your financial house in order, not because you're looking to sell the business, but you're trying to make sure that you can compete in the marketplace and have some leeway, some of that freedom of action to make the decisions that need to be made in order to do that. I've had this saying for quite a long time, and I think it's appropriate for the way I see the economy unfolding. When things are going up, everybody thinks they're a genius that they did it. And then when things are tough, you actually have to be one. So I hope that I've contributed some ideas to get you on that particular path. And I want to thank you very much, and then ask if there are any questions. So thank you.